Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance present Indiana Ag Policy with your host, Eric Pfeiffer.
Welcome into the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Glad to have you along. And we took this one on the road. We are in Kansas City, Missouri side. We're in Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. A lot happening here, a lot of discussion surrounding trade in the Trump 2.0 era and everything else. And be sure to tune in and follow us online at HoosierAgToday.com and on your local radio station for all of that news. Today, I'm excited to welcome in the Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. Richard Fordyce is here. And Richard, thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate the time. We've known each other for a little while now. You came to Indiana some years ago, and we hung out for a while.
I did, yeah. No, it's great to be on with you today. Yeah, I remember the trip to Indiana. We had, I think we had a field day at a farm, maybe even a trip to the state fair, I think, might have been in that trip.
Yep, absolutely. So we're just excited, Richard, that, one, you guys are back to work. We're excited about that. I think right. You are too, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, I went through the at that time, the longest government shutdown, you know, in the first Trump administration when I was the administrator of the Farm Service Agency. And you know, in this role, had to go through Senate confirmation, had a Senate confirmation hearing, had to wait on a vote. And so was confirmed in late September, was sworn in by the secretary, actually here in Kansas City. And then went to Washington on a first day of a shutdown. So, you know, and again, I think, you know, when people talk about a shutdown, I don't know that everyone completely understands what that means, right? Yeah. So, you know, in our case, you know, congressional funding, you know, that intermittent funding that comes from Congress, you know, that's what came to an end. We still had the ability, we learned later on in the shutdown, we had the ability to work on some programs that were funded other ways. And so we can talk about that in a little bit if you want.
Absolutely. And we should mention, this is kind of your backyard. You are a Missouri guy, a farmer from Missouri. And
exactly.
Again, in Trump 1.0, director of the Farm Service Agency. And that's how we kind of got to know each other.
Right.
You were
right.
Wandering the state with Steve Brown, the Indiana
right.
executive director. And now that you're in this role, let's talk about some of those things, because some decisions had to be made, and it's not as though you had the full width and breadth of your organization, because most of the employees were furloughed, just some of the top level employees, the secretary, the deputy secretary, and undersecretaries got to continue working. And so what did you discover during that shutdown that you were still allowed to do, and how did that come about?
Yeah, well, you did mention Steve Brown, and I want to give Brownie a shout out. You know, he's back as state executive director in Indiana again. Great leader in agriculture. You know, we're happy that he agreed to come back a second time. So
coming out of retirement, it was.
I know,
like Michael Jordan just coming around.
I know. I don't think he can dunk like Michael Jordan.
I don't think so either.
But anyway, good to have Brownie back. You know, so farm production and conservation is made up primarily of three agencies, NRCS, FSA, and RMA. So our mission area was a little unique because, for example, RMA, you know, is that really good demonstration of a public-private partnership, right? You know, a lot of the policy and compliance and those kinds of things happen within the agency leadership, but the delivery of the program is done by independent crop insurance agents, right? So RMA was really, I wouldn't say completely unfazed, but the activity and being able to administer the programs continued pretty much uninterrupted because of that private partnership with crop insurance companies and agents. NRCS, while we were able to be able to do things that, you know, would help in cases of risk to property or to lives, so watershed protection program and some other programs, they were allowed to continue within NRCS. FSA, when the shutdown happened, we shut down. And so offices were closed, as they were with NRCS. And then some days after the shutdown continued, we thought, you know, there might be some things within the FSA office, so mail, incoming mail and things, that we probably ought to check on. And so we actually deployed a person, not in every office, but covered every office, to get the mail, look at things. Do we have a legal notice? Is there something we need to respond to? So we did that for a number of days. and then actually continued to investigate what our authorities might be under a shutdown, and got legal opinions that we could go in on a limited basis, so two people per office, to help administer programs that were funded by the Commodity Credit Corporation. So that was a funding. So that was a funding pool that existed, did not have really anything to do with the shutdown. It was limited dollars,
right.
But we were able to work on CCC programs. So as some examples in FSA, you know, ARC and PLC. So we were able to bring folks in, you know, have them sign and certify for ARC and PLC payments, get those out the door. Also, really important, you know, not only in Indiana, but across the country, and maybe even more important, like in the South and Southeast, were marketing assistance loans. Almost all of the cotton, peanuts, you know, the initial marketing of those commodities is done through marketing assistance loans, and certainly, you know, corn and soybean growers in Indiana utilize those programs as well. So being able to open up the marketing assistance loan program and start to administer that was really important as well.
As we've gone through this now, you know, we're back open, staff is back, everybody, we're good to go. Are we seeing an influx of farmers come into these offices? Because it really couldn't happen at a worse time. It happened right at harvest, and quite frankly, for many across you know, our part of the world, harvest happened quickly, and farmers were just kind of waiting around, couldn't do that business that they needed to do at the FSA office.
Right, and you know, there were a lot of things that were happening. You know, and one thing, you know, I mean, your folks, they're probably aware of a fiscal year, like a federal fiscal year, but don't really know why that's important. Well, you know, in the federal government, USDA specifically, you know, the start of the fiscal year is usually when we like audit systems and we, you know, we make sure we clean out what happened in the previous fiscal year, start fresh, you know, with all of our payment systems and compliance systems and all that. And that happens right after the beginning of the new fiscal year. Well, a shutdown happened at the beginning of the new fiscal year. So the people that really, you know, get those systems all ready to go for the next year, they were all on furlough. So when we did open back up, CRP is a good example. When we did open back up, those people still had to do that work that they typically would have done at the beginning of the fiscal year before we could start, for example, doing CRP payments. You know, NRCS, we had, as you mentioned, harvest was pretty uneventful in Indiana. So harvest gets completed. That's usually the time when landowners, farmers are out there doing conservation practices. Well, that came to a stop because we couldn't design practices and we couldn't get those practices approved. So, you know, all of that is now happening, right? And so my hope is that we don't go from like really nice fall, really nice weather, pretty easy harvest to winter. So we have some time to be able to maybe do some of those practices. But it affected every piece of farm production and conservation mission area, in some ways more impactful than others, but it did affect all of those agencies.
I think the good news coming out of all of this is with the continuing resolution that opened the government back up, some things were thrown in there for agriculture funding, USDA for the next fiscal year, this current fiscal year. So regardless of what happens in January, and who knows what will happen in January if another shutdown happens,
you guys are good, right?
We are. You know, and I think that's important. You know, and I don't know what conclusion to draw from that. I mean, what I would like to say is that Congress recognizes the importance of USDA. You know, not only the food and nutrition programs, but also the assistance that we give, the technical assistance. I mean, I'm not talking about money, you know, in a lot of these cases, although in some I am. But the fact that we're able to, you know, that we're able to not be distracted by funding measures, you know, as Congress continues to work through the budget to get a full year appropriation is really pretty, it's really pretty big for us.
We kind of buried the lead here a little bit, Richard, because since the government has reopened, we're starting to see some programs roll out. We're starting to see some things happen here. A new disaster program, or I guess a continuation of the previous one, just kind of came out. Describe what it is that our farmers can take advantage of here, because there are some Indiana counties that were hit by some of these disasters that happened.
Right. Well, so as a reminder, so as you mentioned, the rollout of the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program, we're calling it Stage 2, is kind of the final piece of the rollout of the $30 billion that Congress appropriated back in December of 24 in the American Relief Act. And so the first piece of that was that economic aid package that that was around $10 billion that rolled out pretty quickly last spring. And then we had the first stage of supplemental disaster relief that really was targeted to people, you know, that I would say like Title I commodity farmers that had crop insurance. You know, we have their data, you know, they had an indemnity. We're going to plus that up a little bit. But all of that was really kind of generated through data through RMA and data through FSA. This final piece is kind of a, I don't want to call it a cleanup, but it is actually looking at producers that either were underinsured or not insured, and in a lot of cases not insured because those products weren't even available for purchase. So in a lot of cases we're talking about specialty crop growers. But we also are picking up what we call uninsured, so no indemnity, but also shallow losses. So let's say an Indiana farm, you know, their guarantee or their yield to trigger a payment was say 180, right? But their yield was a little under that, but not at a level that would trigger an indemnity. So we have formulas that we're going to be able to go in and look and say, okay, they didn't get an indemnity, but we're going to be able to offer some assistance, and a lot of times it might be a refund of their premium, maybe some other fees that they paid. So it's really a plus up, again, a plus up, and catching those farms that didn't have an indemnity but were really close to having an indemnity. And then there's also a quality loss component to this. So in 23, and again, we're talking about crop years of 2023 and 2024. If there was a quality loss, you know, soybeans were discounted, for example, because of quality, or corn was discounted because of quality, we're going to be able to go in there and help with some discounts that those producers had based on quality. And then, I don't know about Indiana, but so on-farm stored commodities. So for example, a grain bin, high winds takes the roof off a grain bin. It rains in on that stored grain, creates a situation where that's not marketable or it's highly discounted. We're able to pick up some of those losses. And then for dairy producers, the milk loss program, if a dairy operation was milking cows for whatever reason, created by these qualifying weather events, that milk wasn't able to be picked up or it went out of condition because lack of electricity or whatnot, we're able to pick up some of those losses as well.
So a lot of information there. And
oh,
the
man.
Good news is that the FSA offices are back open.
That's
for
right.
People to go in and talk about all
That's
this
right.
stuff.
And so, you know, we've been training county office folks this week. You know, they've got a lot of other things to do, and so we took the strategy of basically doing training 2 hours a day. So starting on Monday, going through today, we're gonna train them 2 hours a day on this program. I will say it's pretty complicated, right? And but what's great about our FSA county office people is they get it, right? And they've done something maybe similar to this before. Or if someone in the office hasn't, someone in the office has, they can help, you know, help that maybe that newer employee or whatever get up to speed. And I think that's probably, you know, one of those kind of special blessings that we have in those local offices is whatever the program is, however it's designed, if it's complicated, if it's pretty straightforward and simple, in someplace in between, there are people in the office that have done something similar to this in the past. And so, you know, they get it fast, and they are there to offer that assistance and that help to explain programs and to help folks apply and do all those things that they're there to do, and they are there to assist the farmer.
USDA Undersecretary Richard Fordyce is with us here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We've got a couple of other topics we need to hit here when we come back. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, Indiana Soybean Alliance, and also supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
We're back on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast from Kansas City and the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. I'm Eric Pfeiffer with USDA Undersecretary Richard Fordyce. And Richard, you talked earlier about ARC and PLC and, you know, some good news. I was speaking with one of your bosses, the U.S. Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, Stephen Vaden, the other day, and he's excited about, yes, the government reopening, and yes, we got the funding for the full year, but come January 1, we get to see some of the benefits from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that come into play here for farmers. ARC and PLC being one of those that he says farmers no longer have to gamble on a selection. It's just going to kind of be automatic. You guys run the numbers, and whichever number's best, farmers get. What is that going to mean to the farm community?
So, I think it's huge. You know, we also raised, in the One Big Beautiful Bill, raised reference prices. And there's other components, you know, an additional 30 million acres of base acre allocation, you know, within the country. But I remember when ARC and PLC first came out, you know, and I was trying to decide what crop do I put in what program, and I went to learning centers and training and all this kind of stuff to try to understand. And when I left, I don't know that I knew more than I did.
Extension services are holding workshops, yes, and everything else, trying,
yeah,
to help people make this,
yeah,
decision.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, it is a really good safety net program, and I really like the way that Congress thought about that and how they designed it. And certainly there's been some improvements, you know, to ARC and PLC over the years, but this is probably the best one, right? Because, you know, you could be negatively impacted because you made the wrong choice, and you made the choice at the time that was informed, but things changed. And so the fact that the better of the two after the calculations are done is what you'll qualify for. I think that's huge.
And you're saying things change in agriculture?
They do. They do.
Yeah. And you know, final thing here, Richard, as we talk about the Natural Resources Conservation Service, you know, it seems as though the conversation surrounding conservation has changed from administration to administration. And I guess one misnomer that I believe is out there is that just because it doesn't get maybe talked about as much, or there's not this huge push to make it mandatory, that, you know, Republican administrations don't find conservation important. I don't think that could be any farther from the truth, could it?
No, it's not. And you know, I think our view on conservation, and I'll back up a little bit. You know, I've spent most of my adult life advocating for soil conservation and water quality improvements. You know, in Missouri, I was on the State Soil and Water Districts Commission as the chair of this commission for a number of years. And so, you know, on our farm, you know, we employ conservation practices. We learn something new, we want to implement it, right? But I think we're sometimes, you know, the change in administration gives us an opportunity to level set, right? You know, the suite of practices, you know, that NRCS administers, you know, through a lot of, you know, a lot of thought and really, really good thought from Congress are still there. And we're still going to do those. You know, I think what makes America really great when it comes to conservation is the level of adoption from, you know, Indiana producers, but producers across the country, because it is voluntary conservation. we're not telling anybody what they have to do. You know, a farmer can choose to implement whatever conservation practice is going to fit in their land, right? So like in Indiana, you've got a myriad of soil types. And so, you know, one conservation practice in one part of the state is going to work, and a lot of people, you know, subscribe to that. Another part of the state, it's going to be something different. And what's great about NRCS and that suite of conservation practices is we likely have something that that will fit that farm the best for that geography where it's at. You know, and I've talked to the chief a number of times about where do we want this administration's NRCS policy, where do we want their head at? And it's all about putting voluntary conservation on agriculture land all day, every day, period. Right? No other political statements, no other kind of priorities, but putting conservation on agriculture land voluntarily.
And farmers that do this, obviously people are seeing the benefits of it.
Sure.
And it doesn't work the same on every farm, but the people that are doing it, employing it, they get to make claims about, you know, how they do things. They can save money about with the way they're doing things, with saving passes across the field. So voluntary kind of is the way it should be.
It is. You know, we've been doing no-till on our farm for a long time. But I will go to another part of the state where, you know, either soil type or something, you know, just 100% no-till just doesn't work for them, right? And so they're going to do what is best for their farm. You know, the introduction of cover crops, you know, I think depending on your geography, you know, you're going to have different species of cover crops. They're going to work differently in your operation. Providing that flexibility, informing the decision to farmers and landowners about, you know, the different options you have in conservation and letting them pick what's best for their operation, to me, is the only way that it should be done.
Richard Fordyce, USDA Undersecretary, and I'm sorry if you felt like, you know, everybody left the office when you got to D.C. They had to. It wasn't about you.
Right.
It was mandated. But thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Joining us. Really
thank
appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Eric. Appreciate it.
And that does it for this edition of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we thank our sponsors, the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance, and all